Greetings, Range Seekers, and welcome back to the Bendability Podcast with me, the Splits Wizard, Emmett Lewis. Today we are going to be looking at the second part of Stretching Scientifically, where we will be going over the practical side of the book. Once again, get your own copy of this. I fully recommend and fully endorse that you should have this in your library if you are interested in range of motion development in any way, shape, or form. It's a good book. So this week, because the edition I normally use is harder to get your hands on, we will be using the fourth edition, which is available from Stadion, Amazon. We'll have some links in the description, so check them out. Probably buy it directly from Kurz, he probably gets a better cut. You can buy a PDF version as well. If you're watching this on YouTube, I'm going to try editing some footage as well and play with my editing. We'll see how it goes. I'm always new to this editing, so let's try these things out. Let me know if you like it. First things first, a bit of housekeeping. The podcast is doing immensely well, better than I expected. I was top 105 in the USA charts for an in fitness category, so that is immense. So thank you all for that. Remember, reviews, ratings, whatever you got, please do. If we could break top 100 this week, would be absolutely unreal, be crazy. So there's a simple rule. If you like it, tell your friends you like it. If you don't like it, tell your enemies you like it. Very simple. With that in mind, we're just going to get through it. So I got myself a copy of the fourth edition and I got my trusty highlighter pen out. And we're going to go through. So first thing on the fourth edition is it's got some cooler pictures. The very first picture is Thomas Kurz doing a split with a baby on his shoulder. And then on the back cover, it is Thomas Kurz doing a split with a lady sitting on his legs. I assume on the About the Author, it's Thomas Kurz. One picture is worth more than 1,000 words. And yes, I agree. I would like to point out the lady fashion has swung around. But as you know, I'm kind of into fashion and trends and stuff like this, oddly enough, even though I dress like a hobo. And you can see the lady is wearing a very high-legged position swimsuit. And what do we know? Fashion has come around in circle and high-legged position swimsuits are back in. So she is on point. And Thomas Kurz is wearing short shorts, short yellow shorts, and what looks like a belly top. So possibly fashion is going to go that way. I know short shorts are coming back in for men, so grab your short shorts for summer and show off those thighs, the most forbidden body part to display. Ditch the cargo shorts, you know how it is. Belly tops on men. I'm not certain how I feel about that. They're probably better than the nipple stringer things, so yeah, who cares? Anyway, let us get to it. So first sort of comment on it is the stretches are laid out in a very logical kind of order in terms of sectioning. It starts with dynamic, it moves on to static active, and then it moves on to isometric and then relaxed. It's probably laid out this way because this is probably the order you should be programming your stretches in your own training. It is a very interesting way to do it, and it definitely works. And if you think about how do I set up my own programming, this kind of progression model is quite nice. If you think about what we say in the Modern Methods of Mobility or the people who are training that program and listening in, you'll probably know you're training the shortening side of your joint first and then training the lengthening side. And we have taken this concept and applied it slightly differently, but it gives you a hint as to there is a foundation to it. So starting on page 31, if you've got your copy of your book, I'll read out the quotes I want to talk about and then we'll take it there. Dynamic flexibility, the ability to perform dynamic movements within the full range of motion in the joints, is best developed by dynamic stretching. This kind of flexibility depends on the ability to combine relaxing the extended muscles with contracting the moving muscles. Besides perfecting intramuscular coordination, dynamic stretching reduces passive resistance movements throughout the range of motion. Well, there you have it. And it is kind of one of these things. It is common for me to come across people who, not always yogis, but I'm not going to bias it, but a lot of time people train sort of more relaxed stretching methods can possibly display something quite good, but then they have no dynamic range and they have no static active range, and these ranges have to be developed separately. Developing your passive in relaxed moments doesn't work. There's also an interesting thing. If we think about dynamic movements used to train dynamic movements, we know from our training, from other stuff, that we can also use dynamic movements to train static movements. And you see this a lot in planche variations or front lever variations, if you're familiar with those kind of movements, that we can use dynamic movements and selectively add pauses to get them. It also, the speed of movement is very important because there is this intramuscular coordination. The intramuscular coordination changes depending on the speed you're moving. So depending on the needs of your activity, you will need to train at different velocities, possibly all of them. If we're moving quite slow, there's generally agonist, antagonist, contraction, co-contraction to kind of control the movement and make it fine. When we're moving faster, there's this general, like, they pulse on and off after each other. They kind of, one goes, the shortening side goes, the lengthening side goes, and then the shortening side goes to break the movement. So there is these kind of different velocities have different coordinations revolved, and they are skills in and of themselves. So you have to train at different velocities. So one of the things you can think about in your dynamic stretching training is incorporating speed as a variable. That's one of the, I think I've talked about it before, it's possibly on one of the articles, but it is important for a total range of motion control picture and coordination and the ability to give yourself choice. So bear that in mind in your own training, your own programming. Next quote. Fatigue usually reduces dynamic flexibility, so don't do dynamic stretching when your muscles are tired unless you want to develop a specific endurance and not flexibility. It's one of those things like yes and no, and the ability to sustain a big workload and display your range of motion over that workload is something that should be trained. And it's definitely one of the things we get into with more advanced people. If we look at, say, rhythmic gymnasts or ballet or circus or performance that requires you to be kind of displaying your aesthetic and flexible potential over a long duration of time, a circus act doing a discipline could be 4 or 5 minutes long. A circus show could be an hour long of all stage time. So being able to actually train to the point where you can maintain your flexibility within its operating ranges is one of these things that is a specific type of training but should be looked at. And it's definitely one of these things, like if you're using the antagonist driven shortening dynamic flexibility side of thing, building the specific endurance in the antagonist muscles to the lengthening ones is very important and will give benefits. Like, oh, I want to be able to do a lot. Well, you know, they have to train to do a lot and it has to be brought up. This is a good one. According to Matyev, 8 to 10 weeks is sufficient to achieve improvements resulting from acting on the muscles. Any further increase in flexibility is insignificant and it depends on long-term changes of bones and ligaments. Such changes require rather extensive training, i.e. regular loads over a course of many years. It's one of these things, like if you could reach your full dynamic flexibility potential in 8 to 10 weeks, then no one would need me. I'd be out of a job. And unfortunately, I don't see that as the case. I think you can display your active dynamic potential inside your operating range. And remember what our operating range is, the range we can display either cold or in after a non-comprehensive warm-up is our operating range of flexibility. And our goal is to expand our operating range. And as we are raising our other flexibilities, we should be able to see a concurrent raise in dynamic by either putting on the back burner for a bit, raising the other one, then coming back to dynamic or training them concurrently. This is one of the things where we get into conjugate method, I suppose, application towards flexibility training, is that if we can raise all our strength, hypertrophy and maximal strength or dynamic effort, repetitive effort, maximal effort all at the same time, we can raise all our flexibility at the same time, and we can also hone in on the weak links, raise them, and then see a concurrent gain in the other one. So it is about targeting weak points in certain points when you are gaining flexibility. It's like, oh, I have splits, but I can't lift my leg past my waist. Well, then we need to work something else, and vice versa. So just bear that in mind that there is, it's kind of one of those things like 8 to 10 weeks, and you see the swell isometric stretching that it takes 10 weeks and that's as flexible as you're ever going to get. Bullshit. Like it takes time. it does take time and takes consistent training, which is kind of the point, that it takes extensive training over a period of time. And the gains are not insignificant. So I do have a bit of a gripe with that quote. And yeah. So generally with the dynamic movements, what I don't think comes across in the application of Thomas Kerr's methods is when people are doing leg and arm raises, they turn them more into swings where the leg and the momentum is carrying you through the movement. It is good. It is almost crossing over to ballistic type stretching or one form of ballistic stretching, but it is not the be all and end all. And this is the thing that people need to take, is the movements are almost controlled lifting with a bit of momentum to help overcome the mass of the limbs or the torso moving. And it doesn't come across in the book. And it's something you really do need to think about. It's like, oh, when I'm training my active shortening side, which is driving the dynamics, I want to be always feeling the muscles working and lifting. And this is the goal. Obviously, we can increase our tempo. We could have a beat per minute tempo or a radians per second tempo, depending on what we're doing. But we do want to increase the tempo, the speed we're going, but at the same time, we don't want to be working like a missile where we just kind of shoot it up, light the fuse, and then it goes off. It has this idea of like swing and then pull, swing and then pull. This goes for arms, it goes for legs, it goes for any kind of movement you're doing that is dynamic. My other thing in this chapter is, like, if we get into the stretches of the limbs, they're all essentially open chain positions. And this is kind of interesting to a certain degree. Like, we're always swinging the arms or swinging the legs or lifting the arms and lifting the legs. But we could also think of, like, dynamic stretching could be done in the form of, like, lunges, squats, stance work, all this kind of work. And it doesn't really get a mention because obviously there is a bias for Thomas Kerr towards martial arts and that type of flexibility. So this is something to bear in mind. It's like squatting, when you go in for your warm-up, can be a form of dynamic stretching. Slow, controlled joint rotations are also a form of dynamic stretching if we're focusing on increasing the amplitude of the movement. So we could go, say, FRC and the controlled articulation rotations. It's basically the dynamic stretching. It has a certain different intent and goal and performance of the exercise, but it is for all intents. It's the same with a lot of systems when we're like, oh, we don't passively stretch, but we move in and out of the position. It's dynamic stretching, obviously, because it's movement. And there is a lot of bias. Like, say we're using, stiff leg good mornings to increase hamstring flexibility. It's a dynamic stretch for the hamstrings. If we add controlled pauses in the elongated position, we have this idea that we can pull ourselves deeper. I spoke about this in the pike episode, and it applies to every single position. So I could be going, torso's going down, torso, so yeah, origin to insertion, or center mass to the limbs, movement, with the idea of actively pulling myself deeper. And then we could also think of turning it into a range of motion development exercise. I can do them fast, which will get me to the end of my operating range. Or I could start holding them there for a pause, 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds, something like this, and then lift back out. So we're beginning to get this blending of a static position blended into a dynamic position. And this is one of the key things, getting a lot of results and very good results very quickly in training all facets of flexibility. So bear that in mind. And it is just like when you're going through this book, you know, there is a bias towards sort of martial arts and these kind of things. So that's obviously Thomas Kerr's favorite, and, you know, it is his background and his thing he's trained the most, I assume. Speaking of Thomas Kerr, he's an absolute beast. And I kind of spotted something, it's not in this book, but in the other edition I have, where he's demonstrating a bridge. And the bridge he demonstrates is questionable. It's not bad, but it's not great either. Whereas in the DVD set, or it's probably for download now, Flexibility Express, which I recommend you get as well, he demonstrates a bridge. He demonstrates a method of training bridge using overhead squat. And his bridge at age 60-something is much better than what he demonstrates in the book. So even when, I assume he was probably in his 30s when he made this book and the photos, and at age 60, he's gotten better. And he's more flexible. and he's maintained his flexibility as well. He's doing some crazy feats of range, walking up with about 40 kilos of kettlebells above his head, which is Juji Mufu level things without the anabolics. So, you know, it's always one of these things that when we're talking about longevity and training methods, it's always worthwhile. Never take longevity advice from a 25-year-old, put it that way. Take your longevity advice from the 70-year-old who either had issues and overcame them and go, okay, I wish I'd done more of that, or is still in fantastic shape and has a method that they've done and go, okay, this is my how I've done it and this is how I achieved it. And then obviously you have to kind of sum these things up. But it also raises one of the things I'm going to talk about when I talk about Chinese traditions and stuff like this, where we have this theory of aging in the West where people seem to think like once you hit a certain age, that's it. And what we associate with aging and the declines we will get then is possibly not aging. It's possibly from inactivity. That's one of the ways, this is my current understanding of a lot of longevity research. So a lot of the markers we use, you see this like in China where they have quite a, I'll talk about this in another podcast, but they have quite a good health culture. And you see some incredibly flexible 80-year-olds and 90-year-olds, like flexible, you know, spill splits, bridges, flips, walkovers, cartwheels, the lot. And they just kept it up by doing it. And that's kind of an interesting thing. Do it over a long period of time and good things happen. And maybe it won't happen immediately, but if you stick at it, it probably will. So just bear that in mind. So one of the things I've spotted when looking at the photos of Thomas Kurz, he says the positions he's demonstrating in these stretches is the end positions, and obviously you reduce for your own intensity. Very important cue. But I feel this just showing photos in a book without commentary is not very effective for just teaching in general. Like, if there's kind of a lot of assumptions in this book about your base of knowledge that you know how to correctly perform these exercises or you're in a culture that has them, whereas a lot of people who would get this book might not have it or might not have the coaching. So there could be more in the exercise descriptions. The other thing I find interesting, or what I spotted, is Thomas Kurz, he's got fantastic leg flexibility in some directions, and in other directions it's good. It's, you know, can't fault it, but it could be better. But obviously it's tailored towards the needs of martial arts, so, you know, this is my bias. But his upper body flexibility shows a huge amount of compensations for things being tighter than they should. Now, obviously, upper body flexibility isn't his range. I'm sure he could develop it, as he has later on the bridge. But when you're looking at these pictures, and if you're doing them in a monkey see, monkey do thing, it is possible to pick up faults. You see this particularly with, like, there's a lot of anterior head carriage and pec stretches and stuff like this, whereas we'd want to keep the spine neck position basically neutral when we're doing these, or as neutral as possible. And it could be scalene tightness and stuff like this. So just bear this in mind when you're doing it. I'll point that out as we go in. So he starts off with, I don't really want to go through the exercise too much, other than my comment on the raises are raises with a bit of motion and not a pure swing. And this is the kind of thing where we're beginning to get into, we're crossing planes. We're going from gravity neutral to gravity unassistive to gravity resistive. And if you're weak in the static active components of flexibility, your strength when you come into your end ranges mightn't either be in tune, or you mightn't be facilitated, I suppose, on those muscle groups. Or you mightn't have a good connection to know, okay, as my leg comes up, I pull with this hip flexor, or as my hamstring, if I do a bent leg one, I kick back and I pull with my underbutt hamstring, this kind of thing. So these kind of cues and zones would really help a cue in. And so one of the things we do and that you can try out is performing isometric contractions in the shortening side of the position close to the end range and then following it up with dynamics. So a simple example of this would be, I will do a side leg raise. I'll put my foot up on a box and I'll put some weights on top of it. I'll try lift the weights up. I will hold that for 2-3 goes of 10 seconds. Then I will do my kicks afterwards, and that newly facilitated muscle will help kick me higher. So there is a way to do static active and static active type training before we do dynamics as well, that can facilitate it. Same with, like, if I'm trying to get my squat deeper, I could do some kind of hip flexor raise, and then I can do my dynamic squatting with this idea of pull myself into the stretch, pull yourself deeper, come out. And these are very effective for getting that extra bit of range. We could also add a bit of tasking in. It has a bit of tasking in some of the positions for the leg raises with the hand going out to measure the height. But at the same time, the tasking isn't applied to a lot of the other ones. Like if we're lifting into shoulder extension, we could have something we touch behind us. You know, these kind of things, and they're kind of innumerable, but having this tasking to achieve and exceed and then be able to reset it is. So we're going to move on to the static active stretching side on page 39. And the first quote I'd like to go through is, static active is holding your limbs up or using the shortening muscles to hold yourself out. So anything legs held up to the side. Although this kind of flexibility requires isometric tensions to display it, you should also use dynamic strength exercises for its development. So this is one of the things that goes back to our kind of planche and front lever development, that we can develop these using dynamic motions and then display them with isometric tensions. And it is very useful. It works for a lot of things. It works in handstands. If we're going to pike handstand, we lower legs down to pike, come back up, down, come back up. And we can also start adding pauses in at the top, where I would lift my leg up, pause, come down, lift my leg up, pause, try lift higher in the pause, come down. These kind of things are great, and they are underutilized for a lot of people. You see it in our pacing dog exercises we use in the side split program in Handstand Factory. We see it all around the place. I think there's some with Tom Merrick's videos and stuff like this. But it works in every kind of context. It is one of these things that, like, if it's too heavy or if your leg is too heavy to hold it up, you can build the strength up. If we think, say, I wanted to hold my leg up for 30 seconds and I can't hold it there, I could try to hold it. It's one way to do it. Or I could try do a dynamic motion where I lift it up, hold it for 2 seconds, lower it, and do 15 of them, which gives me my 30 seconds time on tension. Then reduce the number of reps and increase the hold times. It is one way to go about it. The other way would be to do what the FRC system terms lift offs, where you set up close to your end range and then lift into that short zone. And you could also combine that with an isometric contraction. So perform an isometric in the position against something, remove the weight, and then do those short range lifts. That one's always fun to try, because if you set up very close to end range, which you can barely even lift into, perform some isometrics, pushing against weight, pushing against the partner, and then take the weight off and then lift and see how much higher you can lift. So, you know, bear in mind, there's a lot of these kind of ways of layering our positions, which is kind of the key thing I'm talking about today, that we can get a lot of good effects. So the next quote, caution. In the case, it's in a box, so you know it's important. Caution, in the case of holding leg extensions, you must have a strong lower back. My rule of thumb for back strength is lifting comfortably without psyching up or teak grinding at least twice your body weight in the deadlift. If you consider this extensive, you're welcome to learn from your own experience. Like getting a double bodyweight deadlift is pretty good, and I'm not going to argue against that. But if we go to basically every discipline that it displays a huge amount of flexibility and a huge amount of active flexibility instead of active, rhythmic gymnastics, circus, gymnastics, ballet, no one deadlifts. No one, I'm not saying back pain isn't a problem there, but it's as much as any other kind of injury. And this is a, you know, it is a strength exercise. It can be regressed and progressed correctly and safely without relying on deadlifts. And there is ways to do it. So it can be trained. The back also can be trained in other manners, body weight manners and other kind of things. So while it's a good benchmark, and don't get me wrong, double body weight deadlifts is pretty good, I don't think it's necessarily the case, but it is worth getting, put it that way. But, you know, if we look epidemiologically at every other discipline that doesn't have a double bodyweight deadlifts, they still do amazing feats of range without it involving these positions. So it can be got other ways, just like all strength can be developed other ways. Okay. If your sport requires only dynamic flexibility for kicking, say then you do not need static active stretches. Holding the leg up is not developing dynamic flexibility nor dynamic strength. It is developing a static active flexibility and static strength required of gymnasts, but not something that kickers need. I'd argue the penetration power of a kick is developed by being able to drive further through with the static active contractions. And I've done this myself, and I've taught this to other martial artists who have confirmed it. So the ability to like hit at a point and then accelerate through the point at contact. So even if you're kicking slow, and I encountered this in Thailand, like the guys could kick slow, but then drive the penetration through with this kind of contraction. And it was not pleasant. And this idea that it can be done and it should be trained, it can be. Also, the static active displays, like building the strength at your end range, will increase your power. It's the same thing with like being able to explosively leg lift and do a back pike somersault. If I'm unable to get my legs up and hold the pike and hold the bar, I probably will begin to lose power towards the end of the range of motion. And yes, momentum can carry me over, but if I want to get really tight into the pike, you want to be able to do a bit of a static active in that position, particularly if you're into diving or tumbling, trampolining, stuff like this. Being able to hold these positions, even though you're rotating, is a static active display following a dynamic display. So yes, you can use momentum, but I think for complete range of motion development, you need to be cycling these methods in. Static active stretches that involve muscles of the back, such as leg extensions and trunk exercises, compress the spine, squeeze intervertebral discs, and may increase lordosis. This compression is especially harmful because it occurs when the spine is already bent or bent and twisted. To minimize damage, do stretches such as forward bend and pelvic tilts immediately after these exercises. These stretches will relieve spasms in the back muscles and increase the amount of space between the vertebrae. You know, we can't argue with this, but you could also argue it's a technique and constraint thing, that if you are kicking too high that your back is coming into it, you're probably kicking too high. Obviously, there's a need to kick people in the face, as we all know. That's what all flexibility is about. But at the same time, maintaining very good form, it's say when we're using stretch kicks to develop flexibility, the goal is to maintain a very controlled and straight spine and not let it go too much into flexion or extension. So bear that in mind, that it can be done. And you know, as I was saying, it's a constraint thing for me more so than anything else. It's like good form on any kind of exercise. If you can maintain good form and then just be satisfied with whatever height you're displaying, then you should be fine. If you are doing them any which way you can, then maybe you'll need this. The other important point I want to get into is it's the first mention in Thomas Kerr's of the idea of counter stretches, stretching the opposite direction that we are doing. Counter poses, for those familiar with stretch therapy, are a big part of the system. And they are very useful of like, okay, I have just basically actively contracted in one direction, use the muscles in the shortest position and try to make them go even shorter. And then I'm gonna try to alleviate the cramp, do a relaxed stretch or, you know, a relaxed position in the other direction. Definitely worth adding in. It's not a need in every single case, but do try them out. Just think like, what was I doing? I was doing pike compressions. Now I'm just going to do something relaxed for my hip flexors. Things like this. I was doing my bridge. Okay, I'm just going to roll up into a ball. Things like this that do the opposite direction of the stretch. Interestingly though, in a lot of places in contortion, the idea of counter poses is a no-no because they think it's kind of like bending and flexing a metal rod. You know, the places I've seen this come from are very successful at making people very flexible and very good and very beyond the limits expressed in the book. Will I say a yes or no? No, but you know, different schools have different ideas and concepts on this. I just want to get that across. The other thing, just from the contortion side of view, is like some schools do split their front bending days up with their back bending days and don't train them on the same day. One is this probably for DOMS and muscle recovery, yes. But it is one way to think about your training. We're training shortening side of the body on one day, lengthening side of the other on the same day, and then we change around. It's one way to avoid DOMS or all over body DOMS. So this is kind of interesting. When we get into the static active stretches, we don't really have a lot of technique points, and it's kind of I suppose for me, I would like more cueing and more ideal description of positions, because they are complicated, they are tricky. At the same time, there's no mention of gravity assisting or resisting. You can see this on the very first one, which is the hands clasped behind the back shoulder extension stretch, lifting the arms up behind your back, where there's a stick figure displaying the bent over version of this. So one of these is the gravity resisted version of the static active position, and the other one is the gravity assisted or gravity neutral, depending on your degree of forward fold, version of this stretch. These are different effects on the body and can be brought in different ways and different times. So yes and no, they're obviously both displays of this type of flexibility, but at the same time, they are very different to train and they can be used for very different purposes. So just bear that in mind. The same thing comes up when he's got the leg extensions to the side and the leg extension to the front. He's got some stick figures showing some weights and showing some pulley systems. The pulley systems are great fun if you can set them up. Some cheap climbing gear is able to do it. You can probably get one for about 40, 50 quid. Pulley machines at the gym as well, but they can be a bit difficult to configure, whereas your own pulley machine can be very easy to rig up. But a lot of these positions, from my taking, obviously there's a martial arts bias versus an acrobatics bias here, are not how I would like people to do them. There's a lot of leaning backwards and there's a lot of bottom leg bending, obviously martial arts, so acrobatics. The same with, like, there's no real regressions or way you would regress these positions. And I think, you know, there is ways to regress them and there is ways to progress them, particularly with the side tilts where we're standing and we're trying to lift our leg into a standing side split. And there's a lot of, like, subtle details involving how do we get the bottom leg to turn out effectively and transverse abduct, and how do we get the top leg up, and how can we regress this either with bent leg, straightening, bending to straight, which are all displays of this type of flexibility. So there can be more progressions, there can be more to it. And this is kind of the side I'm thinking about in the book that is kind of has a lot of assumptions on. You are in a culture that knows this stuff, as I said earlier, or maybe you can ingenuitively come up with them. The other thing he says on the book is, like, once you can do 6 repetitions with just no weight, start adding weight. Awesome. Adding weight to these kind of positions is very useful. Adding isometrics into them as well, and adding an isometric, then a dynamic lift, a weighted dynamic lift, is also a winner. So we're beginning to get some ideas and some things to try out. If you come up with something cool, send it to me on Instagram on Modern Methods of Mobility, and I'll take a look and tell you if it's cool or not. If it's really cool, I'll say I invented it and came up with it, because, you know, that's how we work. Other than that, I've probably seen it before. So trunk exercises, he's displaying a V-sit in one of the trunk exercises, or what looks like a V-sit. I can't tell exactly if his butt is off the ground, but, you know, it is good. It's definitely this type of flexibility, but then the way of displaying it is done with pulleys and sit-ups, which are also very useful. But, you know, there's more to a V-sit, and there's more ways of regressing it with bent legs, one leg at a time, one leg extending, other legs, training the hard compression side of things with isometrics, adding in tasking by putting a block between your chest or a partner or targeting. So there's more to this. Like, this kind of thing, this book is a very good manual. It has a lot of good information, but there's a lot more into it, and there's a lot more variety that can be implemented, and this is what, once again, as I said, is lacking. Then the back extension, showing back extensions with a weight, awesome exercise. Once again, this kind of thing of, like, he's not in this position, he's not displaying a lot of flexibility for my taste in this position, and there's not a lot of cueing on pelvic position, which would be in a posterior tilt. In this is what we're going for, a posterior tilt. When we're doing these kind of extensions, we would drape the spine into kind of rounded position or flex spine. And then we would extend the hips and the posterior tilt and try articulate the spine from the lumbar spine all the way up to the thoracic, all the way up to the neck can be involved, or you can be pushing backwards with the neck. Same thing in a lot of these positions. What he touches on a bit later is the idea of looking where you're going in a stretch is incredibly powerful. This idea of like expanding the visual range to expand the range of motion. It works for everything. You can try it out quite simply with trying to reach the side or both arms to the side and then look to put them down, look to the side a few times, and then try go and see how much further you go, or try look in the direction you're going. It's not really talked about in these ones, but this is kind of, just bear it in mind. Use the eyes. Like, the eyes are the primary driver of motion for a lot of us. It's like, oh, the eyes look at something, the body aligns itself to bring it in that direction. So at the same time, we can use this increase our range of motion. It's like, okay, I can look at my legs, or I can try see beyond my toes. I'm just remembering this off the top of my head, so I might not get the quote right, but in Pavel's book, Relax into Stretch, very old book, it's good. I wouldn't say it's a must have, but if you pick it up, it's pretty good. A man's sight must extend past his reach. And I think it's kind of, possibly it was a Russian proverb, meaning like, you know, your direction, the way you're going must be beyond what you can touch, because that will drive you forward. And he was demonstrating in a backbend. And it's the same idea. If you're like looking, trying to look backwards, it will help set up all the chains to actually move you backwards. So bear that in mind when you're doing your back extensions or forward folding or everything. Always try to see beyond you can. So we're now on to chapter 5 of isometric stretching, page 49. So passive flexibility usually exceeds active, static and dynamic flexibility in the same joint. The greater the difference, the greater reserve and tensility or flexibility reserve, and the possibility to increase in the amplitude of active movements. Does the kind of interesting thing of static passive stretching, in a lot of cases that I've come across, people can display more range of motion in an isometric position. And this is quite common in side splits, and it's definitely the case in my side splits. If I slide out passively and just even hang out for quite a long time, it just kind of stops at a certain point. Once I turn on the muscles of the right way and squeeze, then I just drop into it. And same with front splits as well. So it's not, I think it's to do with the apprehension reflex and a lot of the control and this kind of thing, that we can, if we're in control of the movement, the body has sense of control, it will be less apprehensive to enter the positions. So while it is the case, it's not always the case, like he says here. And it is something to, obviously the goal would be to be floppy in all positions, but it can not be the case for yourself, particularly if there's been injuries in the zones in the past, is where I tend to see this most. If you've had hamstring strains, calf strains, surgery, whatever, generally a level of contraction in the muscles is needed to a certain degree to display maximum flexibility in these positions. So, you know, we won't take it as gospel, but self-experimentation is the goal. Doing static stretching alone does not guarantee an increase in dynamic flexibility equal to the increase of static flexibility. We agree with this, because dynamic motions have different coordinations and different speeds, require different coordinations of the body, and different demands even on balance. So, yes, we need the more controlled positions to be as high as they can be, but it is pretty common to, I can remember when we go back to my kickboxing adventures, the coaches there could easily kick me in the head. A huge amount of them could not touch the toes. Let's face it, they're not my size, they're small Thai guys who were machines and, you know, head and shoulders shorter than me, yet it was no problem for them to meet the front teep. So yes, no, and maybe. But that is the kind of thing that if you train, like, it comes down to what you train, specific in needs and demands are answered by the body and the organism, depending on what it does and what it is exposed to and what task it has to solve in the environment. Here's an interesting one. Isometric stretching is the fastest method of developing static passive flexibility. It also improves active flexibility as well. Strength in concentric, isometric, and eccentric actions. No argument there. There are indications that it causes longitudinal growth of muscle fibers. We now know that it will add sarcomeres in series. So definitely want longer muscles and hyperplasia that way. We know this from the birdwing studies. We know this from other places. I think there's some better quality research going on at the moment on humans. So we can get longer muscle fibers, but not necessarily longer muscles origin to insertion. Something to bear in mind. Now, caution in a box. So once again, we know it's important. If you neglected your strength training or were doing it incorrectly, isometric stretches may harm your muscles. Yes, this is something I have encountered. It's something, it's kind of one of those things that I can remember. There was a side split routine going around for Martial Arts Planet that involved increasing time and duration, time and intensity of side splits or front splits, going up to 3 minutes. And I received a huge amount of emails from people who had injured themselves using that. And it's not really a comment on the routine. I have my own comments on that. But it's more people were not prepared for this type of intensive stretching and ended up with grade 1 or 2 muscle tears because of it. As I said, it's nothing really to do with the routine. It's to do with the preparedness of the candidates going into the routine. So it's definitely one of the things we know. We know resistance training and getting bigger, thicker muscles aids in injury, and strength is always good. So, you know, make sure you're doing your strength training. The other thing is, like, at the end of the day, isometric and stretch positions is strength training. So making sure that you're not pushing the progress too quickly and having some kind of logical way to increase the depth of your stretches that isn't going beyond it. It's very common with isometric stretches, particularly when you're doing multiple sets of them, to start going deeper and deeper on each set because of the facilitation that happens. And then you can end up in positions that are too deep, or the tissue that is now under load because of the geometrical changes in the body is not prepared for it. And it's always better to play it safe and always come in. And you also mightn't have kind of any duration in reserve. So there's a description when you're ready for isometric stretches going on. It's worth reading. The pain thing, yes, we'll agree with it in some ways, but we can also train through it. There's a quote here. Muscle soreness is accompanied by loss of strength and by shortening of the muscles, most pronounced on the second day after the overly strenuous exercise. Those who exercise on a rigid schedule, for example, every other day, despite being sore after the previous workout, may see their flexibility getting progressively worse rather than better. So it's one of these things that, is muscle soreness really correlated with this? And I've kind of, you know, I have my own thoughts on this. Depending if you're increasing your range of motion or not, is one of these things. Like, I've done these squat everyday programs quite intensively. And I can remember setting like lifetime PRs on the squat on days, like, well, every day was a day after, but days when I was intensely dumbed, but I was still able to go through it. So yes and no, I think there's a lot of research lacking in this. There's not a lot of research done on squatting every day or strength training every day. And, you know, there is a short-term decrement, but a longer-term increment can happen as your body gets used to it. So it is something to bear in mind. The next one I want to talk about, though, is those who exercise on a rigid schedule, for example, every other day, despite being sore after the previous workout, may see their flexibility getting progressively worse rather than better. Interestingly enough, after my first kind of forays into everyday squatting, I was having amazing results. I added 20, 30 kilos to my squat. And, if people are interested in, I'll post the exact routine on that one because it's worth trying. And shout out to my bendy apprentice, that bendy bitch, or basic bendy bitch on Instagram, Isaac. He has an article about squatting every day on Medium that you could check out as well, and auto-regulating. And also Matthew Perryman, if I remember the name correctly, had a book, Squat Every Day, which was fantastic. I use it as a guide for my programming, so check them out. But I did, on the success of the squat every day, I was like, okay, I was, I don't know, 7, 8 years ago, or was it 10 years ago? Whatever, sometime in the past, before Instagram and before everything, when social media was awesome. It was never awesome. Anyway, I was like, when I was gonna rehab my wrist and rehab my leg, I was progressing nicely on the splits, everything was coming back. I was like, okay, I'm gonna try this every day splits, because I had splits in the past. It shouldn't affect me too much, and I should be able to gain the strength quite quickly to display an iso side split, balls to the floor. I'd done it every day doing, I think it was 3 sets of 30-second isometrics. For the first week, I was dropping faster and faster, and it was working. The second week, my flexibility regressed massively to the point where my legs were only getting about 90 degrees apart, and the previous PV was a yoga block on its side to the knees. So then I was like, well, what happened? And it actually, the lockdown on the side split took months to recover from. It would not, the body would not release the range of motion at all. It was traumatizing. Obviously, I had quite a traumatic injury in that zone, so maybe your mileage may vary, but it was a complete lockdown. I had to use a lot of very fancy neuro techniques to actually break what had happened, or to reestablish range, like changing clothes while stretching, looking at different colors, all these kind of things. So advanced wizardry I don't normally talk about, but to get the range to actually release and display back to a kind of operating range that was acceptable. It was obviously quite heartbreaking that it took like probably 5 or 6 months to get back to the range and to get it progressing again. So my personal adventure, and the way I always look at methods, is I try them out myself first. I hone in on the details, the performance, the prescriptions. Then I try them out with groups of people I trust to do what I say exactly. This one didn't even make it into the testing groups because it was too much. And if you see people going ISOs every day, I'd say avoid it. But strength training every day can be very effective in some ways. So it's interesting. Once again, it's showing flexibility training and gaining strength and flexibility training is similar to, but not the same as strength training. We must remember that. Cool. So when you are ready, remember the cautions on chapter 2. Pick only one isometric stretch per muscle group and repeat it 2 to 5 times, using as many tensions per repetition as it takes to reach the limit of mobility that you now have. I highlighted this interestingly because it's the first use of the word mobility in this. And it's kind of interesting to go back to a few episodes ago. I talked about my definition of mobility. And I also talked about the semantics and the words we use are not completely set in stone. And there is arguments over it, whereas here's Thomas Kurz talking, stretching scientifically, using the term mobility to talk about his flexibility. So is it a mistake by him, or is it just these words have different meanings, different contexts, and maybe semantics is not worth arguing about too intensely? Who knows? But definitely something to think about. Here's a good one. So after a few weeks, you may hit a plateau. Regulating the tension and length of the muscles will stop bringing any improvements in your stretches. Do not worry. Do your exercises concentrating on the strength gains you will achieve. These gains are shown by the increased time you can maintain a position, the amount of weight you support, or the ability to stand up, slide out, walk down from your attempted splits. After some time, when your flexibility improves, you will notice a great increase in your flexibility. This is one of these interesting things. And what I say is flexibility results come incrementally. They give you a big burst and then they plateau for a while. You burst and plateau. And you see this pattern all over past the beginner point. And it is very common. It's not linear like strength training in the short term. And well, I suppose once you get past the beginner gains, it's the same as strength training. You get some gains and then it takes a while, then you get some more gains. It's the same with flexibility. And this idea that this is when people get disheartened, where it was working and now it stopped working and now I want to try something differently, whereas you actually have to kind of plow through and reach a certain threshold of increase, and then the body goes, okay, it's safe to display more range of motion, I will display the range. So bear that in mind when you're getting disheartened and You know, play with the variables. Generally, what I say is increase the stretches up to about 75 to 80 seconds. And isometric, holding a consistent ISO for 80 seconds is quite difficult. You will find it will turn on and off a bit. But that idea of like working for that long, and then once you can achieve that 60 to 75 seconds, add weight, add enough weight that you drop back down to about 40 seconds without going deeper. And then, build up some strength there, and eventually you will display more range. Once again, it's always like a warming up thing, like for strength training. The other thing that Mr. Kurz doesn't mention, or Granddaddy Kurz, the grandmaster of stretching, does mention is, if you're performing these stretches correctly and generally not at your true limit, you will generally be going deeper each round. This is where things get tricky in programming, because you might be going deeper in your splits, and then you were planning the whole 45 seconds, but then you get so deep that you are only able to sustain 20 seconds. It's too intense. So what I term as a method of measuring intensity or flexibility is duration in reserve. Excuse me. How long can you hold the stretch for? And this is one of these things like, oh, it's a very gentle stretch, I could hold it for 2 minutes. It's a very intense stretch, I could hold it for 10 seconds before having to come out. Being able to understand your own body and how it responds to stretches and elongated positions and the intensity of them by measuring how long you can last in the stretch is one way to do it. So you could spread your legs 160 centimeters, then you might be able to hold for 10 seconds. Well, maybe you need to have some marks on the floor. We go, okay, I might be able to display a deeper split, but I'm going to walk out the split, get the depth, and then I'm going to walk it back in to hold that final long contraction. A very important thing to do, and very important for consistent training, because a lot of the time you just go deeper and deeper and deeper, and then you just don't get quality work in. It's too intense, you can't maintain the contraction, and these kind of things kick in. So having marks on the floor or other ways of controlling your depth, yoga blocks or other things that can allow you to perform the isometric or the position, whatever you're doing, is important. It's very important, and it's not mentioned here, so I'm mentioning it now. And it's one of the things to think about. It's like, go super deep, and but then you have the intent of holding a final ISO for 30 seconds. Come back in so you can actually hold that ISO. You will gain strength, it will transfer over, and everything doesn't have to be to the total limit. The facilitation of range as well as strength is a thing. So if as a result of isometric stretching or any other exercises, your muscles hurt, reduce the intensity of the exercise or stop working out so you can heal completely. When the pain is gone, if isometrics as stretches or as strength exercises were the cause of the problem, prepare yourself for using them again by doing normal dynamic strength exercises, gradually increasing resistances. So what we know, resistance training decreases injury. So it's definitely something to do, and thicker cross-sectional area is advantageous. It's one of these things like, if we think of flexibility exercise, if we can mimic the flexibility exercise but add weight to the limbs, we can get something. The classic one, I will do side split flies. That's cool. But how do we do this for pancake and other stuff? Oh, maybe we do standing straddle leg good mornings, or we do hamstring press downs. This is a straight leg hamstring extension, you know, using a band or a cable station. These are ways to think about this as well. Leg curls are always good. Most people need more leg curls in the programming, in my opinion. But this idea that, you know, if you're not ready for it, then doing less. And I've done this before when I first got this kind of book many years ago, and it was useful. It is also interesting that these longer duration exercises do build the parallel elastic components, which are theorized in some sectors to be responsible. The damage to them is responsible for a lot of our muscle soreness and sensitivity. And these longer durations, so you're going to see in a second, he recommends 30 reps up to 200 reps. We see this in like the martial art. I train a lot. We do a lot of our things for putting stretch under the tension, under the tendons and the sinew systems, that we would term it in this, and doing like 5, 10, 15 minutes of a single exercise. And it builds immense connective tissue strength, and it builds a lot of connective tissue changes that are undocumented. Like I have a lot of changes to my body that are weird. Like I've grown a membrane over my armpits, these kind of gaps in the collarbone, you can't get your fingers in. And I've seen other ones on more advanced practitioners where tendons feel kind of square shaped instead of round on the forearms and other kind of things. So definitely worthwhile doing. And it's also something that's been co-opted a lot by Westside Barbell, where they'll be doing 100 rep sets of basically isolation exercise with a band. And, you know, I've used this a lot with my people. Once you start training one-arm chin-ups for them, they'll be a feature of your program, because let's face it, the one-arm chin-up eats biceps, eats bicep tendons. So, you know, it's one of those things. I think a lot of people, to attain the one-arm chin-up, you have to sacrifice one of your bicep tendons. A lot of people are able to mitigate it or recover from it by doing these kind of 100 rep sets. So think about adding them in. And you can also use them anywhere you feel you get excessive DOMS. Oh, even if I'm just strength training, I have no interest in splits. Oh, I get excessive DOMS in my quads. Do 100 rep leg extensions for a period of time and see how your DOMS is after that. I've definitely done that as well, and it works. Next thing. This is the kind of thing. The next kind of few pages are talking about frequency and finding your own frequency. And it's kind of interesting in this that Thomas Kurz does come around to the point of view that you do have to experiment and find out what works for your body. The general recommendation is heavy isometrics twice a week, like strength training. Training positions twice a week is generally pretty good. But increasing the frequency can work, and reducing the frequency is one of my favorites. Actually doing things once a week or once every 2 weeks is also effective. And it is with isometrics and lengthening isometrics, there's not a lot of research done on these kind of things other than preliminary research. We know there is a difference in what happens when we're in stretch positions versus mid-range versus contracted. So this idea that to talk about is using different timings and using biofeedback to let you know when you're prepared to train and not following a set schedule, or experimenting with longer gaps between training is very useful. Here's another interesting ghost. Russian researcher Matyev recommends doing isometrics 4 times a week. So what follows on is kind of an overview of Thomas Kerr's training week when he was training for the feats range that you see in the program. So, you know, it wouldn't be a bad training cycle to try out with all the things in this book to make it effective and see how that goes for you. The other thing that I'd like to go on is there's a great book by Thomas Kurz, which is also a must-have in your library, The Science of Sports Training and Planning for Peak Performance. It is a fantastic book, and you can obviously get it from Stadion as well, in terms of how to lay out training cycles over a training year. It focuses more on athletics and stuff like this and kind of sports events and not hobby trainers, but still, applying the ideas in it are quite useful. And even the idea of how you arrange your workouts in a week and how you'd arrange your also training sessions is also incredibly useful. I use it a lot, and it's informed a lot of my choices about how to train people and how we introduce things. So yeah, bear that in mind. So on to the isometric stretches. So he outlines 3 methods of doing isometric stretches and different things, different durations and different ways of performing them. There's one quote I want to go. Second method, stretch as much as you can, tense the stretched muscles and hold this stretched and tense positions until you get muscle spasms. Then decrease the stretch, then increase it, tense it and so on. And the last tension should be held for up to 5 minutes. It makes some people scream. That's actually in the book. Holding a 5 minute duration isometric is I've actually done this and it's not fun, and I would not recommend it. And it's incredibly taxing to actually hold the muscles contracting for this long in a constant steady state of isometric tension. In fact, I'd say it's almost near impossible, because they will turn on and off. Even if you build up to it, there is just a kind of point that they kind of can't sustain it. It also, you do have to modulate your intensity of the stretch and how much load you have into it to achieve it. E.g., this would be very simple to maintain if you're doing a seated pancake with the legs against the wall contracting that way. So bringing our feet through the wall or trying to join the legs against something immovable. It would be, I'm not going to say impossible, but doing this in a side split or a suspended front split would be very difficult. So having a very supportive position and choosing your poison accordingly would be good here. So In the box, we have tensing the muscles in a position in which they are neither maximally stretched nor maximally shortened, in which their tension can be greatest. It is followed by a greater range of motion than tensing already considerably stretched muscles. So this is one of those things when we're particularly performing our shorter contraction movements. If we're completely at the end of range of motion, then you could get a bigger increase. The other kind of thing I'd like to point out is with Kit Lachlan's system and stretch therapy, they found there over experimenting that getting as far into the stretch as you can and contracting there and not allowing any motion, so totally pure isometric, was more effective and gave better results. So it's kind of interesting to have these kind of two people who obviously very know what they want, or know what they're doing and have experienced a lot, but have very different point of views from experimentation. So I think you should try both out and see what works for you. And it's like, I think it basically comes down to the skill of contracting the muscles and how much interoception you have and how much you can actually push against things and how much neural drive you can send to this. If you are very flexible and never trained a lot of this, then the amount of neural drive you can generate at the end of the ranges of motion is very little. If you use this kind of method to increase your flexibility, the neural drive and the ability to contract the muscles will increase as the flexibility rises. So you will be able to contract harder at the stretch positions. So, two points of view on that. Let's share that. For the greatest effect, during a stretch, tense the muscles opposing the stretched one. Well, what do we have here? What is the tenet of modern methods of mobility? Is train the shortening side of your joint to be immensely strong. And what do we do? And you can see this, like, why do we do pissing dog for side splits and then cue people to turn the side butt on when they're going in? Why do we tell you to pull deeper? Because it gets you to display greater range of motion. Remember that. It is pure gold. I've said it before and I will say it in every single episode of the podcast probably. This is one of the keys. You don't want to almost, even in a relaxed stretch, you want to have some idea of something is pulling you into it and teaching the coordination. This will obviously help elongate the muscles. It would also perform co-contraction, which provides more stability. It will also provide reciprocal inhibition. Some people say reciprocal inhibition doesn't exist. I'm not convinced. But either way, this idea of pull yourself deeper, turn the muscles on that are opposing the joint, and then do your isometrics is pure gold. So remember that and implement it. See, this thing, this book has so much in it, but a lot of things are just written as like a throwaway sentence or something that's kind of mentioned in passing and not emphasized enough. So there's a huge amount to experiment with in it. If you were to dissect it sentence by sentence and go, oh, I'm going to try that today, I'm going to try this. And then you go, oh, I'm going to try this with that freak. And, you know, it's a lifetime worth of work. So, or maybe not a lifetime, but a decent amount of time worth of work to find stuff to experiment, to find out what works for me. Me personally, and not just some random thing I found on the net. To increase the tension of a muscle at any given length, put more weight on it. In splits, not supporting yourself with your arms will help. Kind of interesting actually, because in Thomas Kerr's videos, he talks about not supporting yourself with the arms at any point. You're always just going to go to the depth you can't support yourself. Whereas here he mentions supporting yourself on your arms. So it's definitely an interesting way and a different way to get iso side splits is obviously you can increase the weight of your torso. But if you have splits and you're flat for whatever reason, but you can't support yourself, you could start doing isometrics in your split and then gradually start taking more and more weight off and then gradually supporting the legs further down. So you're reducing the leverage. This is one of the things it doesn't talk about a lot, is reducing the leverage on the limbs. We've seen it in the static active where we can bend and extend the legs. And we also see it in splits where we can, instead of supporting ourselves on our feet, we could put supports under our knees and then move them down the calves or the mid thighs or, even stretching on sand as an example would be very supportive and then get used to it. And this kind of thing as well from the Kit Lachlan research of having something in contact with the ground reduces the apprehension of the position. So I remember Kit showed this to me actually with, I was doing side splits, iso side splits, and he put some rolled up cushions, rolled up pillows under my legs. Now, the pillows were just very soft. They were not like solid bolsters or anything, just normal sort of house cushions. And I was able to get significantly deeper because of the tactile feedback that I was supported more. And they weren't reducing, like there was no support, it's just your normal head cushion kind of thing. But I was sinking into it, and we do this on the supported side splits that I shared on my Instagram as well, like supporting it, give yourself something to sink into, experiencing relaxation then allows you to go deeper in a way that convinces the body that it's safer to do so. So it is another way to think about side splits, is to reduce the leverage somehow. Here's another one. Inhale prior to tensing, exhale or hold the breath during maximal tension. One of the things we know about isometric training is it raises the blood pressure, and we know that exhaling reduces blood pressure. So one of the ways to do your isometric is with this idea of exhaling. The problem is that if you release or don't, release it or relax at the end of it or let go of too much, then you obviously lose your isometric and have to recontract. It's also one of the methods I use. I'm going to have a whole podcast talking about all the different styles of isometrics. We have overcoming yielding, which everyone knows, but we have plyometric, we have phasic, we have pulsing, all these kind of types of isometrics that, you know, and different ways of doing them, functional isometrics, blast isometrics, all these types of isometrics that are kind of mentioned but not utilized or known about. And one of the ways that I implement isometrics with people is we have a minimal tension, then a high tension phase coinciding with the breathing. So let's say we have the ability to contract 100%. We have the ability to relax to 0%. So at our isometric, as we are doing it, we want to maintain a steady 30 to 40% contraction. And then as we're inhaling, we will maintain that. As we're exhaling, on the exhale, we will increase the tension in concert with the exhale, a nice slow exhale. And that kind of builds up and contracts harder as I'm breathing out. And then as I pause in the retention of the exhale, and begin to inhale, I reduce the tension of the isometric back to my 20, 30%. So I'm still maintaining an isometric contention, but I'm building more strength because I'm squeezing harder than I could if I was holding it for 30, 40 seconds. And at the same time, I'm still reducing. So it's like going hard, then I'll back off a bit. I exhale, go harder, back off a bit. This can be one of the ways of getting around if you find it very difficult to maintain a 30 second contraction steady. So, you know, play with that, and it works. You know, find a gentle position to try it out with first, and then try it in some harder ones, but it is very effective. It's very, very effective, actually. Here is a good one. How to select your stretches. Choosing which one to do first depends on the muscle group that you feel is the first obstacle. For example, you want to do a full front split, and as soon as you assume the initial position, the stretch you feel the most, you feel the most stretch in the calves of the front leg. This signals that you should stretch your calves, the muscles of your calf first. This is pretty good. It's like, where do I feel it? What's the restriction? Okay, then I will do my isometric tailored for this. Now, if we know we're only meant to do one isometric stretch per muscle group or per position, then that means you're only going to be doing your calves. This is kind of getting close to stretch therapy thing of removing the limitations. The other way to go around this is, I feel it in my calves, but I want to work my hamstrings. I want to work the full split. I perform a relaxed stretch for about 60 seconds, 70 seconds, with the idea of just passively lengthening under a kind of load. Then I'll go back and see how it changes. Does the loading shift into my hamstrings? Okay, awesome. Then I can do a stretch for a bigger muscle group. At the same time, I'll bring the calves up. So this is another way to approach this idea rather than just focusing all your stuff on your calves or other stuff. It's the same as like, where do I feel it in my side splits? Am I just training side splits, or do I feel it in my short adductors, adductor magnus, you know, gracilis, whatever's the limitation, I could focus on that and pick a side split variation that actually fits that, or a leg abduction position that also targets that. Definitely one way to go about it, and definitely a good way to use biofeedback. Always ask yourself the question, where do I feel it and why is that? And can I change that, or is that a limitation? Or a lot of time the limitations don't show themselves in the position. Like say, a lot of people might be limited in the pancake, legs apart, forward fold, pancake, with the piriformis, but they won't feel the piriformis. They just feel that the stretch is ineffective. So there can be other ways of finding this out if you know the positions and know where can be the common weak links. And it's definitely something to experiment with and go, okay, can I find, once again, can I target in on my own personal weak links that limit my range of motion, train them, bring them up, and then I don't have to train the other thing because that will improve both things at once. Bingo, boom, we are in business. So we're going to skip the star arm stretches. There's nothing amazing there. I'd like to actually just comment, if we go to page 61 on Thomas Kerr's horse stance, and it's one of these things that he once again, it's the assumed knowledge that everyone knows what a horse stance is. And if we look at Thomas Kerr's horse stance, it's kind of, there's many different ways. I encountered 26 different types of horse stances when I was looking into these many years ago for horse stance, you know, and every martial art basically has a version of horse stance for its own reasons and has technique points that are important for its martial art and its things it display. But at the same time, it doesn't actually translate the way Thomas Kerr's is doing it. So Thomas Kerr's horse stance, if we look at it, I'll put a picture of it onto the video for those of you who are watching the video. We can see that there is two things. One, if we look at a line connecting his heels or even his medial malleolus, his basic butthole is exactly above this line. So this means the hips are going forward. A lot of people perform the horse stance with the weight going back. And well, not wrong, it's not exactly what's going on here. And this is one of the things that it's one of the keys to getting the horse stance to sidestep progressions working is getting the hips forward directly above the heels, directly above the lateral malleolus. At the same time, if we look at Thomas Kerr's horse stance, he has a huge degree of knee flexion to achieve this because of his joint segments. And obviously that knee flexion decreases as his legs go wider. And also relates back to this idea I had on the Pike podcast. We're talking about setting the hips and extending the legs. It's the same idea on the Pike applied to the side splits. Set the hips in the exact alignment you want with the femurs or as close to it as you can. Then bring the legs wider and bring the legs straighter. So this is what we're doing. It's kind of walking it out. It's the same thing with the bent leg hamstring stretches. We can see this is another way of doing it. At the same time, if the bent leg hamstring stretch is a limitation, it's amazing it will fix it. If it's not a limitation, it won't fix it. And it's one of these things that, as I said, the horse stance side split before is one of the fastest ways of getting side splits if it works for you. If it doesn't work for you, straight leg stretches for side splits can be just as effective. They can be taxing on the knees, but they work. And it's not discussed as an option here, but it's definitely a thing. The other one he says is, 2-minute horse stance held with the hips below knees. Do you need it for side splits? No. Is it pretty good to get and a great starting point for them? Yes. Sumo deadlifts are also awesome for this as well. It's also like that thing, I'll probably measure the angles to give an exact picture on it, but it is tilted to the side. It does also look like Thomas Kerr's knees are internally rotated. I've been asked on this before. It looks like they're internally rotated, but they're not actually. They still are in external rotation relative to the pelvis, just because of the deep flexion and the knees forward position, it makes it appear this way. So he's almost doing a knees forward side splits, but in an upright position. So belly to floor side split, that's the configuration the hips and femur are in, but with everything kind of rotated 90 degrees, if that helps you picture it. The other kind of thing he is talking about that's kind of interesting. He's talking about like, oh, a lot of sports are familiar with this position. Not really, or maybe they are. Like some sports use it, other ones don't. But the strength builds quickly. So, you know, spend 6 to 8 weeks getting up there, another 6 to 8 weeks to stabilize it and you'll have it. Or, yeah, maybe you won't, but work on it. It's also the idea that like, you don't have to hold hip below knees. Like once again, it's this idea that you could hold the deep one or you could hold a higher one that you could build up the time in. Once you build up the time, then you could try and hold deeper. The other thing what's going on actually when we think about bringing the hips forward is the glutes, the side butt muscle, as it's known in some circle, has to basically pull the hips forward in this position. Otherwise, if it's not abducting the legs in this position, the hips will go back. So it's one of the keys that think about going straight down and knees forward in your horse stance, and that will help. Kind of like a squat, straight down, knees forward. So he's displaying, you know, onward on this point, Once again, side split suspended with the person sitting on his legs. You know, we can't argue. Thomas Kurz is a machine, and it's great to see. And he's still a machine. And he's also the inventor of the unbreakable umbrella, which I'm not sure a lot of you know. But yeah, the unbreakable umbrella invented by Thomas Kurz. And it's pretty unbreakable. And there's some great videos of him fucking up some watermelons as well. Caution in the box. I forgot to highlight this one, but I will read it anyway. Full split and suspension. A loss of balance may put your muscles out of commission for a year or more. Your first attempt should be done on objects low enough so that you can rest on the floor without tearing the muscles should you happen to lose your balance. Yeah, I had one student recently who had side splits, got down, and I challenged him. He was able to do it on suspension on yoga blocks. I said, okay, try a chair split, and he tried a chair split on a... what's he try them on? Some office chairs with wheels that can move in all directions. And he ended up tweaking something. Not bad, but it did take the side split out of commission for a couple of weeks. You know who you are, and I know you're listening. And it was nice. But don't sacrifice yourself for stupid feats of range. Also, like, the Van Damme split is the glory in the side split world, let's face it. And everyone wants it. Everyone. There's not a single person on the earth, if you showed them a picture of Van Damme doing splits on the truck and said, would you like to be able to do this? No one would say no, I would not want to be able to do that. No, people would, but secretly we know they want to. We know this. We know they're lying. It's also one of these things, I think Thomas Kurz didn't actually slide out into this position in this. I think I can remember reading somewhere, or possibly in one of his DVDs, he'd done it from a handstand. He got into a handstand. Obviously he has a gymnastic background, he can handstand. There's in some of the other VHSs he had, probably find them in your library if you look around. He demonstrates it that way, and he says that's how he's done it. So, you know, sliding into it is a different beast than being able to slide out comfortably into splits you want to be really good at before you try the old chair split. The next thing I want to talk about is the calf stretches. The calf stretches he has are pulling the toes back in either the foot elevated position or the seated position. You know, it's okay, but I think the calves generally need a decent bit of weight to get them moving. So being in a position where you can actually either do a single leg kind of calf raise position, use your body weight, or hold some weight. Also, if your calf stretches have stopped progressing, add weight to them. Like, this is, you know, there's a few machines in the gym, just straight up gym machines, that are very useful. And the standing calf raise is awesome for developing calf flexibility, because you can really load it up and lock yourself in, and holding the handles can be quite safe. And definitely something to try out. Pulling your back with your hands, like, I think my calves are probably stronger than my back, so my back will give out before my hands do, or before my calves do. So yeah, you know, jacked calves are always good. Just bear that in mind. So moving on, he has a bit of a front split. I'm not going to comment too much about his front splits, because it is turned out, and it's not how I would have people do front splits, but that is my bias, that I want people to do a square hip front split. And he doesn't talk about it because he's kind of relating the front split to the side kick, and or the high roundhouse kick, which obviously this thing, it's for martial artists and this is his training, so this is what it relates to. For me and development of bridge and other stuff, we train the front splits with the hip squared, and the turned out one, we don't really train it. You just get it as a side effect of doing side splits and front split training. It's also, there can be a bias to the lateral edge of the hamstring because of the pancake work, the side split work, and not a lot of front split work, meaning the lateral hamstrings can get tight, and stretching them can be very beneficial and very tight zone that we're unaware of. So bear that in mind. Here's an interesting one, actually. And during a kick, the kicking leg displays only dynamic flexibility. Yep. But the stretch on the supporting leg is more like a static stretch, albeit short, even abrupt. Even abrupt is kind of interesting here, because we're almost getting into this idea that, is it a static position, or obviously you can do controlled kicks like you would see in some taekwondo training. But it can also be, if it's being displayed quickly in a fight or other stuff, it could also be this idea that it's the internal plyometric style of isometric is happening in this, that it's like going into the stretch, it pauses and jerks out rapidly to restore to the standing posture, the fighting posture. So these kind of ideas of being able to rapidly stabilize and co-contract can be very useful in these positions. So following on, we have some back stretches. You know, I'm just going to say, backstretching isn't Thomas Kerr's forte in this book, and he was much more flexible as he got a bit older, so obviously he worked on it, but at the same time, there's a lot more to it, I think, and a lot more ways of training back flexibility that kind of we deal with, just because of our bias towards back bending and other stuff in our system. But, you know, it's not a nothing wrong, and the methods would apply. It's just in terms of what he's displaying. There's an interesting thing also on this page 73, I'll put a picture in the video for those watching, is Thomas Kerr is displaying the incredibly regressed version of the diagonal stretch from Ido Portal. So we can see from a book, and it's also in the older book as well, so even from the 80s the diagonal stretch was cool, and you know, he's training it for trunk rotation, not hip extension and everything. But at the same time, once again, no one really invents these things, and they don't come out of air. They kind of have been existed in one way, shape, or form or the other. So the following thing is, for the back bending, he demonstrates a counter stretch using the term counter stretch. So first time encountering this word counter stretch, and as I said earlier, it's an important part of a lot of systems, and it's definitely worth trying out. So give it a go and think about it and see if it works for you. So, once again, at the end of this chapter, there's a recap, a box warning. Remember, a partner in stretching can cause an injury. If you need someone's help in doing any stretches, it means that you are not ready for them. It is better to go slowly but steadily. I'm going to have a whole episode on partner stretching, so we don't really need to touch on it. But, you know, once again, old school gymnastic coaching of pushing people into stretches, and martial art coaching pushing people in stretches, and probably still pretty common, against their will and against their limits. Not great. Done properly, controlled with a skilled partner, amazing. So we're now on to chapter 6 of relaxed stretching. So there's an interesting comment. The same person who in using isometrics get into a full side split in 30 seconds without any warm-up may take up to 10 minutes of relaxed stretching with no warm-up to get to the same position, same level. Within a couple of months of doing relaxed stretches, this time gets shorter. After some more months, it may take you from 1 to 2 minutes to do a full split. With a good warm-up, of course, you can do it at once. I kind of agree. It's one of these things that, you see rapid changes in range of motion using isometric stretches and contractions, even if you're kind of, you know, coming into training a bit tight. And it is one of the uses, like, one set of isometrics isn't really going to trash your training. A lot of them probably will, and one very heavy set, probably not great. But using controlled contractions and short isometrics in these positions to release them as part of the warm-up or part of getting set for training can be very effective and worth trying out. The same thing is, like, it's this kind of bias on passive stretching. It can take people time to release and relax into position, or for the strength to build up if you're thinking of stretching that way, or the disinhibition to go. It could also be thought about like the analgesic effect of isometrics. They provide analgesia, and that would numb the sensation of the stretch and allow you to go deeper, whereas the same thing happens over a longer period of time of relaxing in the position. Interesting one here. Relaxed stretches decrease strength by impairing the activation of the stretch muscle for up to 5 minutes after the stretch and the contractile force for up to 1 hour. We could say depends on the duration of the relaxed stretch, and depends on what you follow it up with. If you follow it up with, as you've seen some of the work of BAM, it doesn't, and it's kind of, yeah, it's a case by case and a contact usage position or to take. I'll be talking about this in definitely doing a full episode on this kind of idea, stretching for warm-ups and all this stuff. So yes and no, basically. In relaxed stretching, you want as little weight on your muscles as possible. In splits, lean the body forward, support it on your arms, relax completely. Think about slowly relaxing your muscles. Do not think about anything energetic or unpleasant. I'll cut that later. This is kind of one of the things that, you still need a certain amount of load to stretch something. And if there is too much load, obviously the body reacts and tenses against it. And if there's not enough load, nothing happens. So as little as possible can mean a lot of different things. As little as possible, someone could be a suspended side split, and that's what gets them down, particularly if you're pretty strong, or, you know, it's kind of that thing of doing relaxed stretches. Like, relaxed stretches are prescribed to everyone in physiotherapy, do these stretches, but then everyone's basically relying on doing them with body weight, Whereas, you know, for some people, say a big strong guy, big strong power lifter, you know, body weight might not be sufficient to get load on the hamstrings and leg muscles that are so strong and have such a big cross-sectional area, that you might need to add some weight or some resistance or some vector assistance to the position to actually begin to relax into it or begin to let the muscles passively elongate. So yeah, there is this idea that it's case by case and experimentation basis on what actually works. Here we go. Look in the direction of the stretch and breathe calmly with deep abdominal breaths. We've talked about the eye thing earlier, and we talked about how the visual system is related to the range of motion. The deep abdominal breathing is kind of one of these interesting things that it can be even expanded on, that we have this idea called the dissolution breathing in the system, where not only are you breathing, but you want to inflate the whole torso. And this is one of the things that, like, we know on our breathing that all the joints will move slightly. The body gets slightly bigger and taller and longer on an in-breath. And on an out-breath, it gets shorter, basically, or reduces the joint opening. And this idea of, like, not just breathing into the stomach, because a lot of people, when they abdominally breathe, they just push the stomach out. We want to inflate the torso like a balloon here. And then when we let it out, everything shrinks back into the core center of the body. And then there should be accompanying feeling, when you do it right, of getting tangibly heavier. Obviously, you don't get heavier unless you're chowing down on a burger at the same time, but you will feel heavier. You can do it sitting on a chair or standing up or just lying down to get the feeling right. Once you have the feeling of, like, I expand my torso, everything, the joints all open in the body, then I relax, let the air out like a balloon, and get heavier. This is one of these things to practice by itself. Once you find it in a simple position, seated, standing, lying, apply it in your stretches, in your relaxed stretches. And if you can't perform it, you're probably too deep in the position. So, something to bear in mind. So, continues on from this point of just demonstrating some relaxed stretches. Some of them, like, this is the kind of thing, some I say wouldn't actually be relaxed stretches. For me, a relaxed stretch is like he's standing on one leg, lifting the other leg up, or lying on the side, lifting the leg up, and standing side bend on a chair. They're all very good exercises, don't get me wrong, but, you know, relaxing in a stretch for two minutes, 30 seconds even, while you're holding your leg up, while trying to balance, is not a relaxed position, particularly when balance is involved. The muscles will be turning on and off in terms of the equilibrio reception of the body to balance itself. So this will mean, in effect, you know, if there's, yeah, once there's balance involved, you would be better off doing your relaxed stretches in very supported positions with cushions, bolsters, chair support, hand support, you know, anything you've got that can help take the load off and facilitate support. This will reduce the apprehension and allow you to go deeper. And it's very important and is definitely worth trying. So pad yourself up in your relaxed stretches. It's also kind of a small bias of Thomas Kerr's, where he's quite flexible. So the positions he displays, even though he says they are the end goal, are even too advanced for a start goal, even if you regress them for a lot of people, and possibly ineffective. Like, say, he demonstrates a perfectly flat tailor's pose or butterfly position for, as you know, feet together and legs apart while sitting down. A lot of people like this position even regress. They won't even be able to sit on the floor. There should be more regressions provided for very remedial people. Even just assuming a horse stance will do it, won't. So, you know, just bear that in mind. And then he's displaying a bridge also later on. And this is not as great bridge, and not as good as I talked about earlier. He displays a much better bridge now he's gotten a holder. In this, as an abdominal stretch, a bridge is a full body stretch. It stretches shoulder flexion, it stretches the torso, and it stretches hip extension. So say it's just abdomen, I'm going to argue with that, and then counter poses afterwards. So that's kind of the practical side of stretching scientifically. He has some sample workout plans that are kind of aimed at different disciplines. If you read the book and you look into it and know the needs of your sports, then you would kind of should be able to select your exercise and your training programs yourself. There's kind of one comment I want to talk about. Discipline gymnastic, task of the workout, the development of flexibility and the perfection of the handstand. In brackets, a task usually realized by children 9 to 10 years old. Having coached children, even ones who are selected for national teams in dance, gymnastics, sports acrobatics, circus, and other stuff, I'm going to say I definitely got kids who can do very good handstands at that age. I would not say anyone has a perfect handstand at that age. Maybe some of the sports acro people who are very, very good, but at the same time, not always. And not that they haven't got good ones, and not that they're not doing a lot, but I wouldn't say they are perfected. Anyway, they can definitely do handstands. Would I say they're the best in the world? No, but you know what I mean. So then he's got some sample plans of what you should do. And these should be taken more as indicative of what your discipline is, what you do and what your needs are, and how to begin to plot a training thing. Coupled with all the other information, you should be able to make a training plan. You also have Thomas Kerr's The Granddaddy Range, his own personal training plan, but you could try to slot in select exercises that suit your needs better. After that, the rest of the book, you kind of all the whys of stretching that we covered before. And then he has an extensive section on questions and answers, almost 60 pages of questions and answers. I'm not going to get into it because a lot of us is asking, does the method work? How do I apply for this? And it's repeating information he's put elsewhere. So it's kind of one of these things, as I said, to wrap up, this book is a must-have for your stretching needs. You need it on your library. As I've given my commentary on it, you can see how I would disagree with it or how I might implement things differently or how things could work in different situations. Other than that, well, let's say a big thank you to Thomas Kerrs for actually writing this book and keeping it on publication. It's been super helpful to myself. So, you know, if you're watching, Mr. Kerrs, thank you so much. I do recommend everyone get it. Other than that, I have been the Splits Wizard, Emmett Lewis. And this is the Bendability Podcast, and I will catch you next week.